George Parr, you are an investment banker.
Well, I don't think there's any call for insults or name-calling.
Sorry, I was just...
You know, it is, after all, a very difficult situation.
Well, no, but let's face it, you are an investment banker, and I just wanted to get your view of the turmoil that is now engulfing the financial world.
Well, you know, I'm of a certain age. There are not many of us left, my generation. And I can look back at a time when the world seemed a simpler place, with some sense of certainty and order. I think of it as a golden age of banking.
You're thinking of the 60s, perhaps, or even the 50s.
No, I was thinking more of June last year. Why can't we go back to a time when people took the word of a banker as gospel, you know? Now when you get his suspicion, finger-pointing, everybody asking all sorts of difficult questions.
What sort of questions?
Oh, well, yeah, you know, the sort of nitpicking, pointless things like, well, I don't know, you know, where's the money gone? As if I'm supposed to know.
But it's generally thought that it is people like you who are responsible for this crisis.
Yes, well, I think that's broadly true, yes. Yes, we've given far too much credit, we've been paid far too much, and we've been stupidly greedy.
And so, what are you going to do about it? I mean, where do you go from here?
I've given this a very great deal of thought. And what I've decided to do is to go on doing the same things as long as I possibly can.
Surely that's an extraordinarily irresponsible attitude.
Well, yeah, you might say so, but I've considered all the options, and what seems to be the way it works is that I go along to the government and say, I'm sorry, but I've done something exceptionally foolish, which will cause enormous damage to the economy. And they say, have you? Oh, well then, here's £15 billion.
So, like nearly everybody else, you lost a great deal of money on property and derivatives.
A colossal amount of money. But there is a silver lining to it all, if you look hard enough.
Is there?
Yes. Luckily, I lost other people's money and not my own. That's something of a consolation.
Yes, it must be. So, you're all right, personally?
Well, you know, over the last decade or so, it's been very up and down. Sometimes I've had good years. Sometimes I've had incredibly good years. But with the best will in the world, it's impossible to spend the amounts I've earned, so I've still got quite a lot of it left. If other people had done what I did, they wouldn't be moaning about their food going up.
Yes, many people would say that it is those who can least afford it that will suffer most from your mistakes. Those with mortgages and credit card debt and the lower paid.
Well, I think it shows extraordinary lack of gratitude by these people for what we've done. I mean, if it hadn't been for us, City of London would be just a pathetic backwater instead of the financial centre of the world. And think of the billions which flow into London every day, or used to. Think of the enormous amount of tax revenue that generates.
But people like you hardly pay any tax.
No, but think how much it would be if we did.
But haven't people in your world insisted on light regulation by the government and a generous tax regime? In 2002, Gordon Brown cut the capital gains tax on business assets held for 2 years from 40% to 10%. Yes. If you were a partner in a private equity firm making millions out of deals, these millions would be taxed at 10%. In effect, they would be paying income tax at 10% while their office cleaners were paying 20%.
Yes, as often said, but it's very simplistic. A lot of private equity partners weren't paying anything like 10%.
No?
No. A lot of them were paying 5%. Some of them were paying nothing. In 2006, there were 52 billionaires in this country. 32 of them didn't pay any income tax at all.
Well, why did the government go along with this?
Because the private equity firms went to them and threatened to move their businesses abroad. And the government said, please don't do that, we want you to stay here. If an office cleaner went to the government and threatened to go and clean an office in the Cayman Islands, the government would say, well, piss off then.
George Parr, as an investment banker, why are we so poor when last year we were so rich?
Well, of course, I still am rich.
Indeed.
But yes. I take your general point. Partly it's to do with the business cycle.
The business cycle. Now, how does that work?
The market is a very sophisticated mechanism. Sometimes it goes up and sometimes it goes down. When there's more greed than fear, it goes up. When there's more fear than greed, it goes down.
So you're saying the banks have been too greedy?
Oh, no, not at all, not at all. The opposite is the case. The banks have always been noted for their public-spiritedness, for having the interest of the poorest in mind.
Have they? I must have missed that.
Oh, no, certainly. Over the last few years, the banks have been saying to themselves, we've lent all the money we can to people who've got some assets and some prospects. How can we start lending to people who haven't got any money or prospects or any hope of paying it back?
The banks were being compassionate, were they?
Oh, very, very much so, very much. And, of course, we can charge much higher interest to those sort of people. A commercial bank will go to one of their poorest customers, say, I don't know, a single mother who hasn't worked for 5 years, who's constantly going over her credit limit, who's behind on her credit card payments, who can't keep up the mortgage. And then somebody will ring her up and say, how would you like us to lend you the money for a new conservatory?
And what does she say?
She says he's not sure about it.
Why not?
Because she lives on the 10th floor of a tower block. But the man at the bank goes on trying. And what you have to remember is these people are really desperate.
The people in the tower blocks?
No, the people at the bank. No. They're not paid very well, so they need their sales bonuses to make a decent living. So this woman gets a second mortgage.
But isn't that terribly risky for the bank?
Well, you'd think so, wouldn't you? And so would I, but then I'm not very good with figures. But I have some very clever chaps working for me who are, and they found a way around this risk. They came up with what's called securitization.
And how does that work?
It's absolute magic. The first thing is, it's no good for the bank just to hold on to a mortgage on its own. All it means is we get some pathetic dribble of interest every month for the next 30 years. It does absolutely nothing for our bonuses.
You might not live that long.
That's slightly unnecessary, if I may.
I'm sorry.
No, but you're right. So what we do is to take this mortgage, we put it together with lots of other mortgages and bits of debt, and pass it up into what is called a structured investment vehicle or a collateralized debt obligation, and we sell it.
The advantage of that being?
Being that we can book the whole lot straight away as a big profit, and that does wonders for our bonuses.
And you don't have to wait 30 years for the money.
Precisely.
But a risky loan is still a risky loan, isn't it?
Not if you pass it up with a lot of other loans, and some other loans are of good quality. If you do that, the bad loans somehow get better.
All on their own?
Sort of all on their own, yes. I mean, we're in very deep waters here mathematically. I mean, the people who devise these financial instruments are incredibly clever. You see, one of the things which makes loans risky when you mix them all up together is what is called correlation. If one very risky loan is put in with a lot of other loans which are very much the same, it increases the risk.
Because if one goes bad, the others are very likely to.
Exactly. So we had to be sure there was very little correlation in the loans in a CDO.
Such as there being a lot of subprime loans to